people almost short circuit around the idea of having a conversation of ambition and contentment side by side. But I think that it's so important because in Eastern traditions, when we translate it to English, contentment loosely translates to unconditional wholeness or the knowledge of enough. And so it's asking us on the inside, can we cultivate that sense of unconditional wholeness? Because otherwise, we are perpetually looking externally for what we need to be doing internally.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm here with Amina Altay, who is a leadership and mindset coach, a speaker and entrepreneur who helps high-achieving professionals build careers that they love without burning out. If you're one of those high achievers and you're maybe burning the candle on both ends, this is going to be a conversation we definitely want to pay attention to because we need leaders to be healthy, happy, and actually making some innovations and massive changes in the world right now. If you are not familiar with Amina, she is the host of the Change Your Life podcast, author of her latest book, The Ambition Trap, How Do We Stop Chasing and Start Living, and the creator of the Align Leadership Methodology, which we're going to discuss a lot more about today, where we're really going to see how can we clarify our zone of genius? How do we navigate mindset barriers and create sustainable, profitable careers in the process? A lot of her clients include some of the Fortune 500 leaders, founders, and she's truly helping them bring out their best without burning out in the process. Amina, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm overjoyed to be here.
Well, I'm very glad that you're bringing your message forward because I feel like there's two major sides of the coin that I see in the world. Like there's one side that I hear the quiet quitting, which I know is completely outside of what you usually speak about, but I feel like on one side of the spectrum, we have people that are minimizing their involvement, minimizing their ambition, just carrying along in the workplace. But I feel like there's a lot of individuals, which I assume a lot of my listeners here are high achievers. They're trying to make a change in the world and they're working their butt off almost to the point of burning out. So I'd be curious to know, looking at this landscape, what inspired you to become the voice for these leaders that are trying a lot and maybe burning out in the process?
You know, you just put this so astutely. As I was writing the book and I was socializing the content, people kind of fell into two camps. There was Camp A, with people that are highly ambitious, but their ambition has been very expensive. And that's my story. And I'll tell you more about it. And then there was Camp B. And Camp B had seen a version of ambition that was so dysfunctional that they said, I don't want any part of it. I fully renounce ambition. And those are the quiet quitters, right? But what I realized is that we actually need a healthier relationship with ambition because ambition is a beautiful thing. In the book, I redefine it as simply a desire for more life, a wish to unfold, which is neutral and natural and in every living thing on the planet, from our plant babies to our human babies. But how we've been taught to be in relationship with it is the dysfunctional thing, right? So many of us are taught that it's more for more's sake all the time, like more money, more power, and that's going to make us happy, but it never does, right? And so that's the narrative that I wanted to rewrite. And I'm somebody that was highly ambitious. And 6 years into my career, I burned out and I developed two autoimmune diseases. And it happened in a very dramatic fashion where the universe was, you know, whispering and then it finally shouted and I listened. But I got a call from my doctor who said that I was days away from organ failure if I didn't go to the hospital instead of going to work. And so that was my stop moment. That was the moment that I realized, hey, my relationship to success and ambition is dysfunctional and I need to reimagine it. And that was really the starting point. And, you know, 15 years on, I'm a coach to other highly ambitious people and I notice the same patterns alive in their life. And so I felt like we needed this framework to really show us a different way.
I love how you're reframing ambition as a whole, because I've always had this idea that when somebody is like truly ambitious, it's almost like there's a, I don't know, some shadow that they're running from that seems to be the fuel of this ambition. Is this a very common trope?
100%. Did you ever watch the movie The Conclave? It came out recently.
I have not. No.
Okay, so it was about the papacy, right, and choosing a new pope. And there was a theme that came up throughout the movie, and they were talking about ambition. And they're like, oh, I shouldn't have ambition to be the next pope. Like, it's such a bad thing to have ambition. Because how we understand it in the world is that shadow side, right? It's the people that are willing to do the more for more sake all the time, no matter the cost, right? So in the book, I talk about no ambition is neutral and natural, there's really two sides to it. There's painful ambition, which is driven by our core wounds, and that's the shadow side of it. And then there's purposeful ambition that's connected to our truth and coming from a place of wholeness. And so that painful ambition has a couple of traits where it looks like instrumentalizing our minds and bodies to get to the goal, to the point that we hurt ourselves. It looks like needing to win no matter the cost. And there's nothing wrong with winning, right? We all love to win. I'm sure you do. I know I do. But the no matter the cost bit, right? Well, we'll hurt ourselves and others to get to the goal. Looks like black and white either or thinking, or moving at unsustainable paces to achieve what we desire. So it really is the shadow side, but there's an invitation to pivot into that more purposeful.
So if you are somebody that's maybe in that camp where you're finding yourself going, okay, maybe I am someone that's burning the candle on both ends, is there like a bit of a self-assessment to realize? Because I mean, you had an autoimmune disease that happened, almost organ failure. So that's a pretty strong indicator that we're on the wrong path. I'm wondering if there's earlier signs we can look for to make sure that like, oh, okay, maybe I should do a course correction and I don't need to get to that point that it gets so bad.
Yes. So, you know, this is such an interesting question. I get asked this a lot. And as a coach, I mean, I think this perspective is interesting, but I think that we get our lessons when we get our lessons. And sometimes we have to experience enough pain to drive the change, right? Because if it's not uncomfortable for us, we're not going to change. So for me, it had to be really painful, and it was really painful. When it's a little bit of a pebble in our shoe, we're usually not going to choose another way.
Yeah. I think of all the biggest times I've made some shifts in my life, like I didn't listen, but I also know that when I got to that really bad place, it's also been something that I credit to the biggest changes and growth that I've had following that experience. And so if I'm like, yep, yeah, I'm motivated by shadow, I'm going down this path, I'm burning everything down, but I'll be okay. Is that the mindset? Like,
I do think that there are really rare people that are like, hey, I don't need to get to the discomfort. I can choose change. But I think those people are kind of an edge case or kind of an exception. But I also think sometimes we are inspired by those around us. So when we see more people living in purposeful ambition, which is moving at a more sustainable pace that honors our minds and bodies, that is about collaboration versus shining as an individual, we can start to see the benefits of that in other people. And then we feel motivated to do the same thing. But I think that that we either have to experience the pain or we have to watch somebody else's payoff usually.
Fair. Okay, well, I want to step into the shoes of a different type of, call it persona, or at least a different scenario, which is we talked about how, you know, quiet quitting is often just because you've lacked the purpose or the point of working really hard. So if you're feeling disengaged, you're like showing up to work kind of sucks. You're like, is this ambition something we can nurture? Are there some questions we can ask to find ourselves at least exploring the possibility that we could have a lot more fun and make a much bigger impact if we rediscover that spark?
Absolutely. And so like to the quiet quitters, right? A couple of things, right? So sometimes it is that we are renouncing ambition because we've seen such a dysfunctional version of it. But also sometimes it's people that just want the quote unquote good enough job. And like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? I'm somebody that feels like I really need to center purpose in my work. And that's what I came here for. So that's my choice. But there are so many people that are just like, I'm just happy to get this paycheck. It's a 9-to-5. That's good enough. And I find my ambition and my purpose outside of work. And so I always say to people, there's no right or wrong way to career. So if you choose more purposeful work or you're like, hey, I got the good enough job, either way, blessings to you. But in the book, I take people through, there's a 5-part framework to center purpose in our work. And so it needs to leverage our zone of genius, be values aligned, connected to the impact that we want to have, honor our needs, and cultivate a sense of contentment. And when we've looked at all 5 of those areas and we're cultivating those in our work, we're usually living into purposeful work that supports purposeful ambition.
Wow. I'm so grateful that you're sharing this message in this context, because like even what you shared is your 5 dimensions. I immediately started thinking about the Ikigai kind of test. And what I find interesting about the Ikigai is that it's all about like, okay, when you've hit a 10 out of 10 out of these 4 dimensions, like now you have to continue working, but there's no like end point. And I feel like that fuels a little more of that, call it negative ambition, because it's like, it's never good enough. You have to keep going. You talked about a 5th dimension, which is this sense of contentment, which is something I haven't heard before. And it's something that even in like, in the spaces, it's like, you got to go and build a $1 billion business. Everything's about go big. And this sense of contentment is not something I've heard about. And I find it very sobering Could you expand about that dimension and why it's so important that it's equally cultivated?
I love that word choice, sobering. It's beautiful. I felt this was so important. And the more conversations that I have with people, people almost short circuit around the idea of having a conversation of ambition and contentment side by side. But I think that it's so important because in Eastern traditions, when we translate it to English, contentment loosely translates to unconditional wholeness or the knowledge of enough. And so it's asking us on the inside, can we cultivate that sense of unconditional wholeness, right? Because life is always going to be up and down, right? We're always going to be kind of riding the waves. But can we cultivate that sense internally, that internal stability, that regardless of what's happening around us, we have that unconditional wholeness. We have the knowledge of enough inside of ourselves, because otherwise we are perpetually looking externally for what we need to be doing internally, right? Me and my clients are the perfect examples. There's no amount of accolades, titles, shiny objects that will ever be enough if there is pain on the inside, which is why I start the work with the core wounds, right? And so I think it's so important that we're cultivating that sense of contentment. And it's different from complacency, right? This is another question I get where it's like, well, am I just not going to be reaching for the next thing? Complacency and contentment are not the same thing, right? It's not resting on our laurels, but it's the knowledge of this enoughness and the unconditional wholeness.
I have a little anecdote that I mentioned at the start of the call or just before we recorded. I used to work at Mindvalley, and we have this thing around everyone who leaves Mindvalley, not everyone, but there's a large majority of people when they leave Mindvalley, they fall into this like gloomy state of it's almost like a post Mindvalley like anxiety of, oh my God, is what I'm doing relevant enough, big enough? Because when you're a part of a culture that's so ambitious, that's trying to change the world, you had such a sense of, you know, purpose that came through your employment that when you left, you almost had a sense of irrelevancy. And I'd be curious to know, how much do you see these workplace cultures and values and mission play a role in supporting our ambition versus times that it might be a bit too much?
Yes, I love this question. And I have a lot of clients where a lot of our esteem is sort of attached to a brand, a name, a title, right? It's like you're working at the Googles of the world, you're working at the Mindvalleys, right? These places that are shifting culture, driving change, innovation, and that gives us something, right? And so sometimes when we step away from that, there's this huge identity impact. But I think that that points to where there's some beautiful work for us to do of like, where were we over-identifying with our careers, with this space, and not with ourselves. And so I always think that's such important information to sit with. Like even now, you know, so I launched the book in May. So in the book, I talk about how ambition goes in cycles. So it's not the more for more sake all the time. It actually is more like the seasons. So we have this seedling of desire. I want to grow. And then you nurture the inner and outer environment. So the seedling grows and you have this beautiful momentary peak in the sun. And then the seasons change and the petals fall off and you wind down and you go back underground and maybe that ground is fallow until it's nurtured enough that you rise again. And we need to be okay in these underground moments. And it's countercultural because we live in a world that's like grow all the time, but you can't grow all the time, right? Just look at Olympians, right? They bake in their rest days. They bake in their, they work with sleep coaches, right? That's how important that underground time is. And I'm in an underground moment right now. And it's uncomfortable. I'm not going to say that it's easy because it's not, because so much around us is all about growth all the time. But I think there's so much magic in that underground space. I'm curious how you felt.
Well, my book came out in 2021 and it was all buzzing, reviews coming in, tons of traffic, big launch, all the favors called in, super nice. Now the book just continuously sells. And some of the work that I do, sometimes I'm like, all right, I'm involved, I'm working on a project, then that project closes. So I would say I've just finished is it too dramatic to call it a dark night of the soul cycle? Like a moment that it's like,
I'm so dramatic. I'm here for it.
So like I finished a big project at the end of 2024 and I had this whole cycle from like January until almost May. And fact is, I didn't kick myself over it. I'm like, I'm giving myself this kind of refraction period until I get to go all in on the next project. But this seasonal thing that you speak about, I've witnessed that in my life continuously. I think I've gone to a place where I'm like, I'm not kicking myself over it. But it's very real. And I think it's worth reminding people that it's real, because from the outside, people like podcast keeps publishing, posts on socials keep going. None of that is being shown. But I know that for me, that was a big period of just like I was focused on fitness, health, and getting ready for the wedding. So
yes, that's incredible. And I love that you think about that and that you're comfortable with that, because even though like I teach it, I think it's just so interesting to notice how I still have discomfort around it. And so we're all human and it's definitely trippy sometimes.
I can say that now because I feel like I've past the phase, but while I'm in it, you know, that feeling feels very jittery. Like I found myself, I was trying this new initiative and I was like, I want to do this, I want to do that. It was very like unsettled. And I feel like I was just trying to move for the sake of movement. So if I could elaborate on something that might be familiar for others, is like, it wasn't that purposeful, but I was just trying a lot of different things with half of a heart.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The word I've been using to describe it is untethered, because there's times when we have a North Star, it's like we know what we're moving toward. I don't really have that right now, but I think that there's beauty in the wandering. When my clients are in this space, I'm like, okay, you need to let yourself get bored. And they're like, what? Like, never. I've never been bored in my life. I'm like, but it's so helpful, because there comes the next inspiration. And we don't do it for that reason, but there's magic in this space.
All right. I've heard you use the word magic just now. A little earlier, I heard you talk about universe. So I'm seeing you got some spiritual fairy dust in your messaging as well. So you are in the business space, career, which most of those words are usually coming from a different spiritual realm. So I'd be curious to know how much of that spiritual side and, you know, do I dare go as far as call it a bit of the law of attraction side? How much does that play a part in your model for leadership?
Like, I'm a highly spiritual person, and I really believe that spirituality is super individualized. In the book, I talk a lot about just coming back to ourselves and to intuition. Just, you know, some of the biggest messages that I've gotten in my life have been on my meditation cushion. And so really inviting people to get quiet, to listen to their own voices. There's a whole section on cultivating faith and sort of believing in something, you know, bigger than us. And so it's a really big part of my work. And it's interesting. For the astrology friends out there, I'm a Scorpio sun, Capricorn rising, Aquarius moon. And so I sit really nicely between the two worlds, right? It's like I look like somebody that really fits well into a business environment, but like the Aquarius moon will go all in on the spiritual side with you. And so I feel like it's a fun thing to be able to kind of like have a foot in both worlds. And so a lot of the times with my clients, you know, I feel like attracts like. So oftentimes it is people in a business context that have a big spiritual background, but maybe they don't feel fully comfortable talking about it, and then bit by bit we'll kind of dip our toe in together.
I find that the higher or more responsibility these individuals in powerful positions are, the more they have this kind of hidden like spiritual side. Like, you know, big organizations still pay a lot of money for feng shui, you know, like that's one of the aspects that it's like it's very spiritual, but people take it very seriously.
Oh, 100%. In my marketing career, so there was a time where I was working at a beauty brand. And they worked with this very well-known financial psychic to establish the price of the product. And when I met this financial psychic, turns out she was the psychic to like all of these bigwigs on Wall Street, like basically the entire US economy held up by this psychic. And I was like, I'm obsessed with this.
That's fascinating. But like the more that you are in positions where there's just so much data coming at you, like you're CEO of a large organization, there's so much data at you that you can see some trend lines. You spoke about how intuition plays an important part. There's almost like a necessity to nurture that muscle, given that it's so hard to make decisions when you have incomplete data.
Right. Absolutely. Right. And data is not the whole story too, right? It can show you things, it can show directions, but it's not the whole story. And so I think we need to be making decisions with our heads and our hearts and our intuition, all of it together.
Well, I do want to put a parallel here since you are on the Selling with Love podcast. There's a lot of people listening in. They're either currently selling their products and services, maybe part of a sales team as well. I'd be curious around your concepts and how much you've played with them in the sales environment or sales context.
I'm obsessed with sales and teaching sales, because I think that sales, this is a perfect segue from our last part of our conversation. I think sales is actually a spiritual practice, because I think it requires that we be seen. It's consensual. It's about, I think of it as like the hero or Shiro's journey, right? Where it's like a teacher that is showing up with gifts and when the student is ready, but you have to be willing to kind of transcend the threshold and trust this teacher enough to lean into them and buy the thing. I really think it's a spiritual practice.
It's so funny because, yes, my book, Selling with Love, is talking about like the five loves of selling, and it's teaching you like how to find product market fit, understand how to create your offer, understand it has to be tied to your bigger why. But the entire thing is really just a Trojan horse to the ultimate thing that I speak about, which is self-love. Like, I find sales, because you have to interact with humans and it's relationship and it's at a high frequency, becomes like a turbocharged path for your personal growth.
I could not agree more. It is one of the biggest growth edges I ever see for my clients.
But there is, again, those two stereotypes around sales, which the one is most people who are not very aware of sales will often look at the negatives, ego-driven, shadow-escaping type of big a-hole salesperson seems to be the manifestation of the dysfunctional ambition. But there's a lot of great salespeople that have a healthy type of ambition. So I'd be curious if these caricatures have been encountered in your world.
100%. When I think of painful ambition and I think of sales, I think of non-consensual domination, right? Like sort of the when people are like doing something to you in a sales process, or it is power over you, or it's manipulation, that is painful ambition, right? But when it's an invitation, when it is shoulder to shoulder, and we realize that we're on this like equal footing together, when we realize that we are in service to each other, we're not doing something to each other, right? When it's harmonious, for sure, those two archetypes show up here.
What I find unfortunate, and I guess that's my big mission, is that these healthy, ambitious types are often not seen because they don't make good stories. And so Hollywood's definitely more interested in the power over and dominating type of arcs, we could say, as far as making for some interesting entertainment. And I find that's unfortunate because I think it scares people away from what potentially sales could look like for them.
Yes. I mean, I feel like that's true of most things, right? Like even relationships that are shown in the media, right? When we think of like narratives on TV, like so much of it is codependent and dysfunctional. And I think sales can be really codependent and dysfunctional. And so I think having healthy models of most things is super rare.
Well, you've opened a segue, which I don't know, it's not topical of my podcast, but I feel like right now everyone is looking at the caricatures of everything most toxic in every dimension. Like I look at my Instagram, I look at the YouTube, you mentioned relationship, and it's like everything that's being shown about like what women want, what men want, how men behave, like it's just so weird. And even in the concept of ambition, if I can tie it back to our core here, is that you know, we see that, okay, you need to go out and build a $1 billion business. You got to hustle all the time, wake up at 4 a.m. What was that viral guy, the black guy with like super ripped, put some cold water at 4 a.m., taking meetings, running, like, and it was the biggest meme for a while. And people are like, oh, I need to go hardcore like that to have any form of success, is I think one of the biggest myths you're trying to break.
100%. I just find that to be so dysfunctional. You know, it's like, so, you know, I am a coach and so I'm in the coaching space, right? So it's like, once you get to six figures, then it's seven figures. Then from seven figures, it's eight. From eight, it's nine, right? And I'm always like, well, what is the rest of your life like? And I'm not saying that we renounce bigness for comfortability in the rest of our lives, but I am advocating for harmony, right? I know so many people that grew to eight or nine figures, but sacrificed profitability and their lives. And I was like, well, what was the point of that? You had better margins at lower revenue, and you also had more time for yourself. And so I think we need to ask ourselves the bigger questions, not just go for these arbitrary goals, because most of them aren't ours, right? Well, I should go for that because it's the next milestone. Says who, right? What do you want for yourself? I forget which coach it is, but they say, ask yourself the five whys, right? You want seven or eight figures? Why? Why? Ask yourself the five whys till you get to the root. What's underneath it? Oh, you want freedom? There's lots of ways to cultivate freedom. I'm not saying that you give up the money, right? I think money is a tool. Money can be really powerful and set us up so well. And we need to ask ourselves these bigger questions.
What do you feel when you see those people that are absolutely crazy ambitious and are shaping the world today? And I'm going to pick on the usual tropes of Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, you know, even Bill Gates. Just picking into those examples, like my personal perspective is you have these highly dysfunctional people that are completely obsessed with a certain ambition. And it doesn't look healthy. It doesn't look normal, but blessed are we as a population that we've had the people who have driven innovation into these directions to the point of insanity, that it's created positive ripples. And I'm just wondering, what's your perspective on that?
It feels like a bit of a false binary. So I'm going to answer this question a bunch of different ways. First of all, a lot of us that are in that painful relationship with ambition are coming from a core wound. So there's five core wounds, which are rejection, abandonment, humiliation, betrayal, and injustice. And it's a very human rite of passage to have one, two, three, or all five of those wounds. They happen in our family systems. They happen on the playground. They happen vicariously. And so we each have one, two, three, or all five, and then we wear a corresponding mask. So if you have a rejection wound, the mask you wear is avoidance. If you have a betrayal wound, the mask you wear is control. And so you can imagine if we have those wounds and we don't do any work on them, that the ambition is just going to be rapacious, right? This huge desire to succeed no matter the cost, because the pain is actually on the inside. So a lot of these tropes and examples we see, to me, I'm just like, that's just some unhealed core wounds. And again, it doesn't mean that we can't have the bigness. We can absolutely have the bigness, but the orientation, the come from, is different. One of the examples that I often use is Sam Bankman-Fried, because it was like very much in the news cycle when I was writing my book. So for those who don't know, Sam Bankman-Fried was hailed the boy wonder of crypto because he amassed wealth almost faster than anybody in history. And he created the FTX exchange. Now, he built a company on risky trading practices that weren't exactly legal in the U.S., and long story short, had raised a ton of money from huge investors like Sequoia Capital and just like, you know, amazing VCs. And then ends up going bankrupt, going to jail, and losing $8.6 billion of consumers' money and $1.7 billion of investor money, because he just had this huge desire to continue to gain wealth faster than anybody in history, right? So the come from was so painful and dysfunctional that ultimately there's going to be a crash and burn. But yes, so it doesn't mean that we can't have this bigness. And it doesn't mean we can't be in right relationship with the ambition, right? There's so many beautiful examples of people that are in right relationship with their ambition. And there was this wonderful show on Netflix called Sprint. Did you see it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I was obsessed with the show because it was such a great example of the two parts of painful versus purposeful ambition. So this show on Netflix called Sprint, it followed the fastest runners on earth. They run the 1 and 200 meters in the Olympics, both men and women. And you could tell by watching the people that were in it from that dysfunctional place of like, I have to win because I'm the underdog and I'm coming from this place of pain. And people that had that bigger come from, that bigger why, right? Running towards something versus running away from something. And we have so many beautiful examples in the business world too. Like I think the Patagonia founder, right? Like doing such beautiful things with their business. And listen, there's critiques of every type of business, right? But I feel like that is a really good example. And so for everyone that's in painful ambition, we can find one or two more that are unpurposeful.
Is it similar to what I was saying, which is like they just don't make the headlines as much when they're doing it from a healthy place? Maybe that's the big difference.
You know, it's such an interesting question. I feel like that requires like a big media analysis. But yeah, you know what? I bet you there's like less drama. So people are probably less interested. It sells less headlines.
Yeah, it's boring. You know, like in sales, I'm like, hey, guys, let's make a movie about, you know, John, the B2B SaaS salesman who basically builds relationships. He goes to these companies. He tries to help them, you know, understand and frame their problem. And he offers his solution and he closes these contracts, which will last for 10 years and, you know, might be worth around $3 million. And he does this on a daily basis. Nobody gets screwed over. There's no drama. He just does his job. He feeds his family. It's boring. Like it's a boring narrative for a movie from Hollywood. And I feel like this needs to be highlighted more. And I'm excited that what you're doing with your book is you're highlighting the leaders that are in a similar situation.
Yes. And you bring up such a good point, right? Because the drama is an adrenaline dump and most of us are addicted to the adrenaline, right? And the purposeful ambition, not that it's boring, but it's more stable. It's more sober, to use your word from earlier. And it's less of an adrenaline dump. It's more like riding the middle, which I think arguably is so much healthier, but we are addicted to the adrenaline dump.
What are the things you're most excited about, given that, you know, you've brought your book forward, you've even mixed in a lot of this like spiritual side, you're kind of allowing, what is it, closet spiritual people to kind of feel more comfortable. That's one of the trends I'm seeing in the world right now. What are you most excited about when you're seeing leadership development field as a whole in today's world?
I mean, really, the reason that I set out to write this book is that we spend more of our heartbeats at work than we do anywhere else. And 4 out of 5 people are dissatisfied with their jobs. 19% of people are downright miserable. And so I feel like there's such an opportunity for us to make workplaces better. And I feel like purposeful ambition is a great place to start because it asks us to all center our gifts together, knowing that together we are stronger. It asks us to honor our bodies. It asks us to be collaborative. It asks us to move at more sustainable paces. And I think what a better world we'd live in if we were all living into those ideas. And it doesn't mean that we sacrifice profit. In fact, it's the contrary, right? We grow. We have better revenue. We have better profitability when we see that people are happier. And so that's really my hope. Like, I want people to talk about purposeful ambition in the same way that we talk about zones of genius.
Well, there's one question I love to ask all my guests who come on the show, so I'll ask you the same as well. You're on the Selling with Love podcast. So what would selling with love mean to you?
Selling with love would mean really honoring the individual's aliveness. I think that's what all of us want, is like we all just want to feel more alive. And that's why people look to buy a service, look to buy a thing. And I think sometimes we really make people small by manipulating them in a sales process, telling them they don't know what they want and need, right? And so I think if we can honor their aliveness and their intuition, that's a really beautiful thing.
Amina, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm glad we had you come on the show and share some of these insights. I would encourage everybody that's tuning in to pick up a copy of The Ambition Trap, How to Stop Chasing and Start Living, so that you can find yourself maybe being a little more healthy with your ambition and make sure that you're building a great movement that doesn't necessarily burn you out in the process. And what I love is that you're bringing this. The biggest thing for me is a healthy relationship with contentment, not as something that's making you perceived as being lazy, which is probably how your inner judge does it, but rather a healthy metric to make you continue for the marathon, not the sprint, of what it is like to build an amazing career full of impact, full of purpose, and done in a way that shapes the world. Amina, thank you so much for being on the show. This was a fantastic conversation and something that I'll bring back into my own work.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it so much, and I can't wait to sit down with you and pick your brain.
We will have the reversal. I will be on your show and we'll have a look there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.